You're listening to Radio Influence.
Got him in the white trunks.
He heard him.
Beautiful. Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the power.
Whoa.
And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the March 28th edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvan. It's another week where we enter in with no UFC or Bellator event. And of course, this weekend, no UFC or Bellator event, but we're going to do a little theme show here, as of course the Final Four is coming up this weekend, as we are going to tell you our top four performances from last weekend's regional MMA, plus we'll get into other things going on in the world of mixed martial arts, including we're going to start to preview the preliminary card of next week's UFC 223, plus we're going to have three interviews for you. We're going to talk to Ed Ruth, Josh Sampo, and John Castaneda. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It is going quite well, Jason. I'm super relieved, just because selfishly, and this is me being selfish, sometimes I work the production end of things for USL game. Tomorrow there's supposed to be a game at 10 in the morning. So what does that mean? If you do a production at 10 in the morning, you got to show up like at 5 in the morning. So that got postponed, so I'm super excited, and that's a problem for future Dan, not present Dan. So I'm happy, I'm motivated, I'm ready to talk about some Final Four fighters from this past weekend. It's always good whenever we kind of have a break from the UFC and Bellator, so there's more oxygen and time to talk about guys that aren't in either promotion. And boy, by God, there were so many events we could have done. Like, you had to cut down the list because we each have four different fighters, and there were still plenty of guys and female fighters left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I mean, while there wasn't any UFC or Bellator events last week, you know, we had LFA had an event, Invicta had an event, A64, which is a newer promotion in South Carolina that my understanding is they're paying fighters really well, won championships, had a card, Bibiana Fernandez, won in the main event there. To me, my number one, performance, I go to LFA, and it's a guy in the main event, Ricky Simon. It appears that he has been signed by the UFC. That's not been officially announced by the UFC as a recording of this podcast, but just a great performance by a fighter that, I've been talking to for several years.
Yeah, that's a great number one on your Final Four. It's as simple as, the Dana White Contender Series might as well be called LFA, because you win a main event in LFA just like Simone did, and, well, you're likely getting a UFC contract. And I guess Simone has a lot of experience on both shows, given that he's won five straight, including a decision when he got there on the Contender Series. He had a win over K-Moose last, but, I mean, it was this matchup against Vinicius Zany where this dude just came out and he finished Zany and retained his strap. And usually what happens if you're a champion in LFA that retains their championship, Jason, that's a belt that's about to be vacated.
Yeah, he's definitely, and heading into that fight, you knew if he won that fight that he was likely, heading to the UFC and see how he goes there. Who's your number one guy?
Yeah, well, you mentioned it earlier, Bibiana Fernandez in the main event of 1FC Iron Will. This was a really interesting fight that they had set up on top of the car, because first, in one corner, you have Fernandez, and this guy, I mean, simply put, he's one of the best non-UFC bantamweights. Obviously, you look at the top few guys Bellator has, and those guys certainly fit that mark. But Fernandez is a guy who's right there. I mean, he's been on the MMA radar since back in the HDNet days when he would fight on Dream. And here he is in 1FC. This is a guy who hasn't lost since 2010. And he was going up against a fighter who was almost like the belt collector in 1FC, Martin Gwynn. I mean, Martin Gwynn had won the featherweight championship first, I think, and then he went and won the lightweight championship. But both of them, he used like the power in his hands to get that, knocking out his opponents. And, that was evident in this fight, but Fernandez, to his credit, really held his own on the feet. In fact, there were a couple moments where he was certainly getting the better of Gwynn, hurting him at times, but it was also kind of that steady diet of takedowns that allowed him to win a split decision over Martin Gwynn. So Some of the competition for Fernandez in 1FC has left more to be desired, but that was not the case in this matchup. It was a really tough matchup. Fernandez extends his winning streak to, I want to say it is 14 straight wins. Yes, it is. And at 22-3, Fernandez is clearly one of the best non-UFC bantamweights, but I think it's relatively unlikely that we will see him in the UFC, just given that I'm sure he likes the paychecks, he likes the schedule, and this is a guy who is 37 years old.
You know, every time I think about Bibiano Fernandez, I think about, what was it, UFC 149? That was a Canada show where it looked like he was going to sign with the UFC, and ultimately that did not happen. Goes to one championships, and you know, Bibiano, I think, you know, he's going to be a guy that clearly, you know, one of the best, you know, 135 pound fighters in the world, but he just as a sports fan and wanting to see the best fight the best, man, I hope at some point we see Bibiano potentially, maybe, you know, whether it's in a Bellator or in a UFC fight here in the United States. But my guess is that based on the amount of money he's making in one championship, so I'm guessing that doesn't happen.
Yeah, he is a part of the Ben Askren All-Star team, right?
Yeah.
It's like him. Fedor is a part of the Ben Askren All-Star team, the heavyweight division at middleweight. I think Mohamed Khalidov is the middleweight representative. And at bantamweight, I mean, you could go with Bibiano Fernandez. And, yeah, it is crazy that primarily his entire career has essentially played out in Japan. And I think if any promotion signs him, I think maybe it might be more likely that Bellator does, just on a short-term deal. But the problem for Bellator and the UFC is that the Fernandez, for as good as he is, the pay that he will command, he doesn't really have that name value to justify it, but clearly the talent is there. And as a hardcore MMA fan, I do hope it happens. I'm really skeptical, but I do hope it happens.
Yeah, it's one of those things you hope that happens. By the way, speaking of one championships, my number two is going to be a guy who's on that card, and that's Gary Tonin. I sat there and watched. It was great that the one championship was on Twitter on Saturday, and man, what a performance. And I mean, look, everyone knows about his jiu-jitsu credentials, and he didn't use it. He used nothing but his striking. I was blown away with that performance.
Yeah, great call here to mention him, because Gary Tonin has been on the radar for a very long time, just in regards to training with mixed martial arts fighters and how good he was as a grappler, how accomplished he was, and just absurdly talented. So kind of snuck up on me that he was making his debut this weekend. And you're right, he dropped Richard Carmenol early, eventually just straight up got mount and rained down vicious elbows, and the fight was called pretty shortly. Not much to say other than this is like really interesting, because so often you see these guys and gals who are really high level decorated Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners, and what do? Take down, rear naked choke, get the win. Tonin, not the case. He kind of flaunted his other skills, and Gary Tonin, I think one fight in, the potential is super high. And I'm really looking forward to what's going on. This was a nice signing by 1FC. I don't know what the deal is in terms of a contract with Gary Tonin, but I think it's smart if you're 1FC to get a guy like that under your promotion, because that adds a lot of depth to your card to run a guy like this with the type of reputation he does have. This was, to me, the number two guy you would have pointed to if we were going to go to another guy at 1FC, so I'm glad that you actually put him on your final four.
Who's on? Who's number two for you?
Yeah, I'll go main event of Invicta Fighting Championship. Another undefeated fighter, Verna Jandiroba. She won the Invicta FC Strawweight Championship in a split decision over Mizuki Inoue. This was a title that was vacated by Angela Hill back when made the jump over to the UFC. And, you know, this was a split decision, but it was a bit of a misnomer. I mean, this was a clear-cut decision win for Verna Jandiroba. There was just a different level of skill-wise and physically on the ground. She was able to control Inoue, and it was a pretty awesome win for a fighter who was undefeated and a fighter who is a big-time name to look out for at strawweight. I don't know how much longer she'll be in Invicta. Verna Jandiroba, a name to watch out. This is a fighter who did lose his fight. She had spent some time sidelined due to injuries, and she has 15 fights under her belt. I think she's like 10-5 now, and this is a fighter who's only 23 years old. So both fighters I would keep an eye out for, but obviously Jandiroba, the undefeated champion, big time weekend for her.
I think another fight I'll mention from that Invicta card is Pearl Gonzalez getting her first fight since exiting the UFC. She gets a win over Kylie Robbins, so see if maybe she can put together a couple of wins and get back. My number three, when I got number three, number four, this is kind of like, you know, A, B type situation here. I'm going to go to 864 Fighting Championships and Dominic Waters having his first fight since exiting the UFC. He gets a win there, so I go with him. He gets a unanimous decision to win over Cody Wilson, and so that was me. That was my number three. What's your number three?
I'll go with the big heavyweight. This dude is huge. Amir Ali Akbari, 8-1. If the name rings a bell, it's not positive. He lost to Krokop not too long ago, but since then he's won three straight, a couple wins in Ryzen. But here it was ACB 83 in Azerbaijan. And, this dude straight up beat down Estonian Denis Smolderov. The way this went down, Smolderov was just throwing haymakers at Ali Akbari, and Amir dropped down. He grabbed a waist lock and brought Smolderov down, finishing him with elbows from the crucifix position. So Ali Akbari is now 8-1. Obviously, losing to Krokop isn't the greatest thing in the world, but maybe a learning experience. And he is a heavyweight who I think you look at what he does well, it's takedowns. A really strong wrestler. So Amir Ali Akbari is my number three on my final four.
And my number four, I'm going to go back to LFA 36. It's a guy that actually you can watch my interview with him talking about his victory. And that's Christian Aguilera, who got a win at LFA 36. A fight where, clearly he had a big advantage on the feet. His opponent had the jiu-jitsu advantage. Did have to weather some adversity there in the first round when the fight went to the ground. But another knockout win. Daniel, Christian now has three wins in 70 days in 2018.
That is impressive. I'm going to do you one better with my pick, or my pick hasn't done that quite yet, but what if I told you his opponent has had 19 fights since 2016? Huh?
Are we talking about Tony Lopez?
No, we're not talking Tony Lopez, Jason. We're talking about the second coming of Travis View. But before I go with my pick, I just want to mention Nathaniel Wood in Cage Warriors, dude, 13-3, main event. Bantamweight champion, 52nd knockout. So that's impressive, but he's not my number four. My number four is the great Edu Kvork, and I may have mispronounced his last name. It's C-A-V-R-K. He's now 3-5. At Pro League Fighting KFN, Carl's Ruch Fight Night 2, Edu came out and beat a tough opponent in Slobodan Vucic. He won with the heel hook in the first round, and Vucic is a guy, a lot of experience. 19 fights since 2016. He has lost 19 straight fights, and he is 0-19. But big-time win for Ido over Vukic, who is just, he's going to get there. He's going to get that one victory. Unfortunately, he is now 0-19.
Yeah, speak about Tony Lopez.
Impressed.
For people who are not familiar with Tony Lopez, Daniel, to give you an idea, in 2018, he's already fought three times. He is in the main event of Alaska FC 138. Since in 2017, he fought 13 times in 2017.
And just to put things in perspective, this is a guy who today is 44 years old. I mean,
it's crazy. I mean,
how green is that resume in 2017? How many wins are you looking at here? Quite a bit.
Right now he has 59 career wins, 27 losses. His most recent win was back on St. Patrick's night. He got a win over Dan Charles, a former Bellator heavyweight.
Wow. I wonder how you go about training with such a heavy schedule of fighting. Like, I feel like that really impacts the amount of time you're spending in the gym if you're going out and you're fighting April 8th and April 29th and May 10th and June 24th and July 15th. I mean, that's a lot of fight camps, a lot of weight cutting. And
he's fighting at heavyweight, so he's not really cutting. He's not cutting weight.
Good point.
But, I mean, it's kind of that mentality of, hey, you don't have training camps. You're just constantly training.
Yeah, and he fights some tough guys. A lot of his losses are to the better fighters, like guys we've seen in the UFC, like Jack May and Ronnie Marks. He's fought some tough guys, but he has really taken that the baton from Travis View as the guy you just see on every card.
Yeah, he fights a ton, but there was a ton of regional MMA action out there. Speaking of that LFA 36 card, I'm sure by now everyone has seen the Drew Chapman situation. It was a fight that was after the main card where his opponent's knocked out and steps on top of his back and does a flip. He's made statements to MMA Fighting about this. Andy Foster has talked about. He does have a 90-day suspension. Is, you know, his purse is being held right now, and you know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see how California handles this. And also, like, if you're a regional promoter in California, you know, do you want Drew on your fight card? And if you're an opponent, would you want him on there? I you know, I've had some people ask me, like, what do you think the suspension is going to be? And I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I don't think it should be that big of a suspension. But Leonard Hamilton, the head coach at Florida State basketball, he did something bad where he like didn't foul. Down 4 points, like 11 seconds left or 8 seconds left, something like that.
Here's the thing.
And he got interviewed.
Yeah, but here's I have no problem with what he said because he's exactly right. First off, anyone who's watched Florida State all year long knows they suck at 3-pointers. First off, okay. So I did read, you know, there was somebody who was there courtside that was basically saying that there were coaches yelling for him, that for the players to foul, and so I think it ultimately. He wasn't throwing his players under the bus.
You see, there's Jason Floyd with his Florida State jersey on, his Florida State trousers.
I'm not a Leonard Hamilton guy. I'm not. I've always felt that Leonard. Look, he's going to win about 20 games every year. You know, going to get maybe to the Sweet 16. You know, and I mean, this year was a different year for the program. But I mean, look, it's almost like. I sat there. I was like, "What did TV execs want to get another commercial break in?"
It's true. That's true. With that being said, this basketball season, we have seen Virginia down 0.9 seconds, down 4 points of 0.9 seconds, beat Louisville. It is possible. It is March Madness.
Yeah, but this is coming from an FSU fan that understands that they can't hit a damn 3-pointer.
Well, that's likely true. But the moral of the story is, if people had not seen this. An interviewer asked Hamilton about it, and Hamilton just was pretty dismissive, pretty rough interview, and he eventually apologized. But what I compare it to is, I think if you asked Hamilton I don't think that's what hell Hamilton acts every single time. I just think he was emotional and he wasn't thinking. It was just dumb luck. He wasn't thinking, and this is a guy who he said he always flips after wins, and a lot of guys do, and he just wasn't thinking. I mean, this guy was just emotionally charged. Got an absurd win where his opponent knocked himself out, and I think it was just a careless mistake. And it's just not something I think from either Hamilton's perspective or Drew Chapman's perspective, the intention wasn't ill. This isn't his attitude, and I think it's something he's incredibly embarrassed about. I mean, he went and talked about it. He just at MMA Fight, and you mentioned it, he said, like, I don't deserve to get paid for that. You know, it's disappointing watching that. My mother has to see that. People that look up to me and see me become an inspiration, they have to look at that. So obviously this is a guy who's really remorseful, a guy who was caught up in the moment, and he deserved to get disqualified for this fight. Maybe he deserves, you know, a 90-day suspension. But for a fighter who is just debuting, just starting his professional career, I think it's okay to not really throw the book at him quite yet. If he does it again, if he flips on his opponent a second time, that's when you're looking at a significant punishment from my perspective.
The number that came to my mind and makes me wonder if this ultimately could end up being the suspension, if this, you know, is something where he has to go in front of the commission 6 months.
Yeah, to me, that's the highest you got to go about it, just because that's a lot for a guy in his position, you know, a 23-year-old that doesn't have anything guaranteed in the sport of MMA and probably doesn't have much in the bank from the sport of MMA, right? This isn't a guy who has 10 fights in his career.
Yeah, he's been an amateur fighter. It was his pro debut. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at it and – you know, it has to make you wonder for his next fight, you know, and I'm sure there'll be a promoter that will want to promote him, say, hey, come see the guy that did this. I'm sure that'll happen. But I have to imagine that, like let's say LFA, for instance, does Ed Soares want to bring him back?
I mean, probably not. No, because this isn't a fighter. This is a guy who was on the post limbs. He's definitely not a name, but he's just not that type of commodity where, if you're LFA, you can probably cut ties with them. And it's honestly, if you're LFA, it's not something you want to think about. It's just, you know, you have so many other things, you just cut ties with them. But I hope he has success moving forward, just because it's kind of a shame. It's such a shame because we live in this age where you can be defined by just a 1 second screw up. And I just think if this guy does this 10 times, 9 times out of 10, he doesn't make this mistake and use his opponent as like a platform to do your U.S. Olympic gymnastics routine, But yeah, I think if you're Drew Chapman, as much as you like flipping, I think you got to retire flipping. You just got to never do it. You just lost that right. You lost that fun privilege because it's just yeah, it's kind of similar to the Darian Caldwell thing in Bellator where he flipped onto a camera woman, and it's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't flip again. I think if you just land, here's the rule in MMA. If you land on someone while you're flipping, you just should no longer be allowed to flip.
Yeah. And Darian Caldwell was involved in a lawsuit about that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, man. I mean, look at if you do anything to anyone and you're an athlete, you will get sued. I mean, look at the deal with Michael Bennett. I haven't read all the details in that case where apparently he like rushed onto the field during the Super Bowl at some point and he like pushed over a lady who was working security in a wheelchair. You're going to feel repercussions because, like, I mean, people like money. And if they see someone with a lot of money and I tell you what, I'm probably framing this in a bad way. I really am, because at the end of the day, this was someone in the Darian Caldwell situation. That lawsuit should happen, I think.
Well, I don't know. I remember when, man, it was like, I don't know, 6-9 months ago when I was initially told about it. I had heard the camera woman had not even returned to work yet.
Yeah, well, that's why I was kind of going back on the way I was framing that, because at the end of the day, she was just doing her job and he kind of like took away her work from her. So at that point, that is actually a really justified deal.
Hey, there's a great segue to that, Daniel. Mm-hmm. And that's Josh Barnett and USADA, where mm-hmm. USADA wanted to give him a 2-year suspension for his, apparent failed drug test. And ultimately he goes to arbitration. He wins at arbitration. And as the ruling is of, you know, he's not at fault, you know, but the sad part about it is so he goes to the battle. God knows how much money this probably costs Josh Barnett in going through all this. And, you know, he's basically for the last 18 months, you know, I think it's like around the last 18 months, he hasn't been able to make a dime off fighting. And so it's a landmark case because I'm pretty sure this is the first time it's happened in terms of the UFC.
So, like, this is crazy to me that this happened. And obviously Josh Barnett isn't the cleanest guy in the whole world, but this is an independent case from some of his past history of a failing test. This is independent. And this is really important because look, man, USADA has been taking some major L's lately. We talked about the Crow Cop deal not too long ago. And with this, Jason, I mean, you are much more plugged in. When you look at something like this, I guess the two questions I have for you is, what does this mean for USADA, and what kind of precedent does this set moving forward?
I think what it shows more for the UFC fighter is to fight it. You know, you sit there and say, hey, I did not knowingly do this. This is where you got to fight it. And, you know, basically what it sounds like is that Josh, you know, showed that, you know, he did all the proper things in terms of supplements that he's taking. And so to me, I think that's, you know, look, there's, you know, when you look at this arbitration aspect and the financial aspect of it, a lot of guys may not have the money to fight this, but I think that says something about it. I'll say this, USADA's gone real quiet about that Crow Cop situation.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's probably a good PR strategy at this point. Move on.
Oh, it's a battle they can't win. It's not smart for them to have that battle and basically try to attack the president of the Association of Boxing Commissions, because they want all the commissions to recognize their suspension. So I don't think it's, and also, and this is kind of, you know, on the Crow Cop situation, I think a lot of people have forgotten the fact he never failed a drug test.
Yeah. To be fair,
he was suspended 2 years for saying he had taken, you know, this HGH after a surgery, which, you know, based on things I've read, this is kind of very common of what happens after a surgery.
Mm.
But I just say it's very interesting they've gone quiet on this one.
Yeah, I think we know why. And the thing is, what we're seeing is this is impacting aging fighters. Like this is the most important. This is such an important time in the career of Crow Cop and in the career of Josh Barnett. You talk about losing time in the UFC. This is a top heavyweight who is now 40 years old, and he is not going to be fighting in 4 years. Well, not in the UFC, I hope. for the love of God, if Josh Barnett is 45 years old, fighting in the UFC, he's on drugs, but he probably won't be. And this really sucks that, you know, it's almost like he should get paid fight payments because he was suspended when he shouldn't have. And I mean, this guy needs to be fighting Josh Barnett, because I don't like him when he does commentary for New Japan Pro Wrestling, because he's not very good. So if he can fight and not commentate pro wrestling, I would love it. In fact, he was doing like a New Japan broadcast. It was live on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that Axis was having some production issues, because after the first match ended, they went to commercial and they came right back on air during the commercial instead of showing commercials. Oh. And Josh Barnett had a hot mic, and this is what he said. They need to get out of the effing ring. Obviously, he didn't say effing. And then somebody heard it, and they cut his commentary mic.
Oh man.
Yeah, that happened. That happened.
Man, someone probably got fired over that one.
Yeah, well, they probably weren't getting paid too much. I don't know, man. That was amateur hour on that broadcast, man. Anyways, but Josh Barnett, he needs to be fighting. And I tell you what, he's probably going to fight Brock Lesnar. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be back inside the UFC cage, you know, because it was September of 2016, the last time we saw him. Of course, that was the win against Andre Arlovsky there in Germany. You know, it's been up and down the past couple of years, but we'll see what happens with him. You know, we mentioned there's, you know, no UFC or Bellator events this week, but next week we do have a Bellator event, and going to let you hear my conversation with Ed Ruth, who initially booked for this matchup to be dropping down to 170 pounds. Actually, during the middle of this interview, we learned that he has a new opponent. So it's actually a catchweight bout of 175 pounds. So we talked about his decision to move down to 170 pounds and everything that's been going on with him in his training camp for preparations for his fight next week over in Budapest. Ed, I appreciate the time. Of course, news came out of this fight. You're dropping down to 170 pounds. Was that always the target in your MMA career, was to eventually go down to 170?
You know, it's funny. When I was wrestling, my weight was – I got all the way up to like about 215. And somebody was looking at me when I was training actually, it was Power MMA in Arizona. And the guy kept saying, he was like, you know what? You look like a 170-pounder. And I always thought those people were crazy. And so finally I started doing the MMA workouts, and, you know, it's a lot more conditioning than I thought it would be. And now all of a sudden, you know, I'm walking around at 185, and it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem to matter how much I'm eating. It's just staying around 185.
You know, because I was looking back at your wrestling career, and I believe it was your freshman and sophomore year of high school, you were around that 150, 160, and then your junior, senior year was at 171, correct?
My sophomore, my freshman year, I was 174, and then my junior, senior year, I moved up to 184.
But that was in college, but I'm talking about back in high school. So, like, pretty much the last time that you stepped on a scale and made 170 was in high school.
Yeah. Well, actually, I made 174 in college.
You know, and obviously you only got away 170 with a 1 pound allowance for about 30 seconds. And I saw on your Twitter account, you mentioned you put a picture up the other day walking around at 182 pounds. I mean, how do you feel differently walking around at, you know, 182 as opposed to, you know, your first couple of fights where you're weighing in 185 or even up at 190 pounds.
I feel a lot better, you know. It just feel like once all that weight kind of came off of me, and I kind of felt like I just took my body and just like rewrote the whole thing. It was like as soon as that weight came off, I started working out different. I started lifting different, and I just started building my muscles a different way. And, you know, I started to feel stronger. I started to feel quicker. I was more lighter on my feet. And I really felt that when I was at 185 pounds, I was just carrying around a lot of bulk. And, you know, all that bulk doesn't matter in the later rounds. You can't even lift your arms.
And, of course, as I mentioned, it wasn't that long ago that we found out about this matchup. So how long have you actually known about this fight?
I kind of found out about it about the same time as everybody else. Ooh, excuse me. But you know, like as soon as I started hearing things on Instagram or, you know, seeing the Budapest card, and then eventually my manager got to me and was like, hey, we're looking at putting you on this card or having you fight on this card, you know, so be ready. And then, you know, that's kind of when everything really started to kick off. You know, I think I just posted something about it like a couple days ago.
I mean, you know, obviously going overseas, you fought overseas before back at Bellator 168. What is the biggest challenge for you fighting overseas?
Biggest challenge has always been, you know, just kind of dealing with the adversity. Where are you going to get this? Because when you're home, you're home. You're comfortable. You know it. You know what you're going to eat tomorrow. You know where you're going to sleep. But when you go overseas, you got to deal with a whole bunch of things that it's just kind of left up in the air. It's like, where am I going to sleep? Where am I going to wash my clothes? What am I going to eat? Or when's there food and all that? You know, and kind of going overseas, like that's the biggest thing that I've been dealing with in the past. And, you know, as well as when I was doing wrestling overseas, it was always a big deal to get sleep whenever you can. Because, you know, leading up into the tournament, it was like, if you didn't sleep or you were just kind of lethargic, it showed in your style. And a lot of times when you go overseas, you got to kind of weigh that as well. You know, you got to be like, okay, well, today I'm going to be tired, so I'm going to have to be tired. And you got to put that in the back of your head and be like, okay, well, I'm still going to perform.
I mentioned about your social media channels, and one of the things I saw you tweeting about it is your brother. So do you get more nervous watching your brother compete in wrestling or when you actually compete?
I get more nervous for him. I don't know what it is. I think it's like it's that removed feeling you get. Because when you're yourself and you're going through something in that point in time, you get the nerves, you get all of that, but once the adrenaline kick in, you don't even think about it. You feel like you're not even moving your own body. But then when it's somebody else and you're watching from the outside in and every single little tie, like whichever way that match goes, you know, you're just right there in the moment. You're worried the whole time. You always want that person to win. And those nerves really get to me, you know. Like when I was watching him wrestle the other day, like it was like down in the pit of my stomach. It just felt like it was just upset the whole time.
And now you've got this matchup, you know, next Friday in Budapest, taking on, and I hope I don't butcher this guy's name, Lazio Furco. You know, what's your thoughts on him as opponent, and what do you see as the biggest challenge that he's going to offer you?
I thought he was a good opponent, you know, but, you know, he dropped the fight. We have a different opponent now, and I'm not really 100% too sure on who this guy is. I had video on somebody who I was aware was in my last fight, but now it's like it's kind of really up in the air. So I'm kind of holding off until the end of this week to say, okay, this is my definite opponent.
I guess you can look at a lot of negatives of that, but is the biggest positive more of like, look, it's about me. It's not about the guy that's going to be, you know, standing across from me in the cage?
Yeah, it makes me feel more comfortable not knowing who the guy is. Because I feel like when you know who somebody is, you tend to fight them who they are. And I like to just go in there not knowing who they are, because whoever they put in front of you, you got to be able to beat that person. Because everybody wants to say they're the best fighter here, there, and there. But if you're really the best fighter, if you beat all the fighters. And you can't beat all the fighters if you're dodging half of them. So, you know, for me, it's like you can put whoever you want in front of you.
Is it also kind of go back into your wrestling mindset of, you know, when you would walk into those tournaments and you don't necessarily know who you're going to be competing against to win the tournament?
It's almost the same thing. Because I never really knew who I had, but when I started to know who I had, I tended to wrestle harder. Or I'll tend to wrestle harder or whatever. But, you know, every time I stepped out there in the mat, I always wanted to make sure I wrestled my match. I didn't want to wrestle up to somebody. I didn't want to wrestle down to somebody. I always wanted to make sure I wrestled my match. And I felt like the biggest part of that was, you know, not knowing who my opponent was. Or even if I did know who he was, I had to trick myself into saying, like, okay, he's just like everybody else. He's just another guy. He's stepping on the mat. He's been doing this just as long as me. You know, it's just kind of because everybody wants to put a name and a label on somebody and put them on the pedestal, and, you know, and to be a great athlete, to be a true competitor, you can't put people on the pedestal because those people on the pedestal, that's your competition.
And that new opponent, Ion Pascu, who is 17-7 in his career, you know, obviously you're taking on a vet here. You know, and I guess people can look at positives and negatives aspects of that, but is it more about, it's just like, look, I love this challenge. You give me a guy who has a ton of fights, and I'm going to show why I'm the better martial artist.
Exactly. Because I feel like when people pay attention to the fight, it's just like, who did the guy fight? It's like, can you name seven people that person fought? You can't. It's like you literally got to go up and look up his stats and look up all the people who he fought and then look up who they fought. And then that's how you really get an impression of somebody. But like, if I've seen a guy and they fought so many times and they're 35, it's like, who did you fight? Like, should that matter to me? Like, it only should matter to me when you fight me.
Do you, you know, because there is so many people are talking about you and where you can potentially go in the sport. Do you also feel that every time you step inside, you know, that Bellator cage, that really, you know, you've got this target on your back and that everyone is going to give you the absolute best they can?
Not at all. If anything, you know, when people say there's a target on my back, if anything, I always see it the other way around. There's a target on everybody else. Because every time I'm training, I'm not training to keep a title. I'm not training to maintain. I'm training to evolve. I'm training to get better. And, you know, when everybody's like, is there a target on your back? I'm like, no, it's actually on my opponent. Because it's up to them to they have to beat me. You know, they have to evolve or they have to get better than I am. They have to start paying attention to the disciplines and getting better at boxing and getting better at jiu-jitsu and everything and all, and to be an all-around complete athlete. And for me, going out there is like I don't feel like I'm going out there to test myself. I'm going out there to show people what I can do rather than showing them like, okay, I can beat this guy. I can only just beat him, but that's it. I'd rather show people that I'm capable of beating them, and it's a matter of like, it's a matter that they can see my training inside a cage, and they just don't see this unpolished fighter who's just there trying to win and get his paycheck and go home.
And of course, anyone that does follow you on Twitter, it is at EdRuth67, the number 67. And I did see, you know, you're of course there, AKA training with Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's got a big fight of his own. You know, what is like that wrestling battle like between you two guys?
It's fun. It's so fun. You know, like, going against somebody like that, it lets me see how much further I can take my wrestling in terms of MMA fighting. Because even though wrestling in itself is just wrestling, but then when you step in the ring and you're throwing punches and then you have to find your shots after that, it's a completely different ballgame. And somebody who has that down pat pretty well is Khabib. And, you know, just kind of going out there and wrestling with them, it was fun. It was absolutely fun. I couldn't tell you another time I had more fun just trying to figure things out.
You know, was MMA fun right from the first day, or did it take time for you to grow into that?
It took time like everything else because, you know, there were some situations in jiu-jitsu where as a wrestler, I don't practice a lot of the flexibility that a lot of people in jiu-jitsu have. And they have a lot of flexibilities with their knees and stuff. But for wrestlers, it's more about taking the guy down, being explosive. So, you know, there was like little difficulties everywhere. You know, even with boxing, my arms used to get tired. My shoulders would get sore. Just doing the kickboxing, my legs would get tired. And trying to kickbox and go straight to a wrestling shot, it was just kind of learning my conditioning. I'm kind of learning how to pace myself or to kind of develop my style and my conditioning around what I was comfortable doing. And that, I think that was my biggest issue. But that was only like the first 2 months. And then after a while, everything just started picking up. And then that was just like, it just became what it is.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to watch your fight come up here on Friday, April the 6th, on the Paramount Network. It'll be a part of the main card. Ed, I really appreciate time, and let all my listeners know where they can follow you out on social media.
You guys can find me at EruF67, and that's my Facebook and my Twitter, and on Instagram is EdRuF67. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to my sponsors. Is that okay?
Go ahead, man.
Okay. I just want to give a shout out to Cutting Edge Bullets, you know, Oak Grove Technology, Dethrone Fresno, Lactico, Black MC Living Warrior, and I also want to give a shout out to Lactico.
And Daniel, there was my conversation with Ed Ruth. You know, obviously a guy that you're paying attention to. When I promoted the fact that he was going to be on the podcast, one of the comments was basically along the lines of, you know, when will he get a top-notch opponent? You know, but I mean, you also forget the guy's only, this is his fifth pro fight. I mean, you want to see if he's a real deal or not, but if I'm Dwayne Zinkin, his manager, I'm not trying to rush Ed Ruth into a top 10 fight.
Yeah. Can we stop putting people on the Aaron Pico diet plan? All right. That is a rare occasion. And look, Ed Ruth's 4-0. He's looked great. That fight against Chris Dempsey was a pretty big step up in competition from his first three opponents. I'll say that much. And give it some time.
Like when I hear managers talk about how I want my guy to be UFC ready, he's going to take UFC level fights on the regional scene. I'm like, why? Like you want you want him to take a UFC type fight at regional pay? Okay.
Yeah, that's a manager who like shouldn't be managing fighters. Because, like, the fighter should be worried about fighting UFC fighters. The manager should be worried about putting the fighter in the best position.
Exactly. And you know what?
I mean,
the fighter. You'll preach.
The manager can't be freaking affliction guy, you know? You don't want your manager being affliction guy with just two pitchers of beer screaming as we go, feel the pain or whatever it is. Ugh. Gross, but good interview, and I love the little switch up in Ed Ruth's opponents, always keeping you on your toes. And honestly, that's kind of funny because that's just like a microcosm of the early portions of a person's career where there isn't a whole lot of fight tape studying, I would imagine, just because your opponent is always changing, and sometimes you're lucky if there's any fight tape available.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's you know, I think sometimes in that situation, and you heard there in my conversation with that, I mean, you know, when you have a change like this, it really just allows you to pay attention to yourself. And you know, to see Ed going down to 170, and, you know, he mentioned about, you know, once he kind of got in MMA training, you know, his weight was just falling off, you know, walking around at 182 pounds right now. He's a guy that, I mean, a loaded 170-pound division. You know, I am interested to see his fight next week. Now, of course, that will be a tape delay show. Of course, we've talked about that a lot. But Scott Coker ended up being on Errol Hawani's podcast on Monday. A very short appearance by Scott, kind of talking about the whole Chandler Pitbull thing. But he was asked about tape delay, and here's what Scott Coker had to say.
You know, hopefully we'll have an update soon, but they are trying to work something out. It might be sitting on our app. Early,
yes,
or live, and it might be on the Paramount app. So I'm trying to get some clarification, but baby, we are working on this. Is not something that we take lightly. It's just you know, sometimes you're in a situation where the station has commitments, and you know, and our international partners have commitments and what they want to air appropriately. But you know, we do want to make it right, and we think the sport should be live, and we're doing our best to make that happen.
And if, you know, Scott Coker with the usual line there right at the beginning, hopefully we have an answer for you soon. But, you know, the one thing I've always been told is, you know, the people inside Bellator want to get off tape delay. They want, you know, they understand they're a live sports property, and that's how it should be viewed. I've always, my understanding, it seems to be more about it's a Viacom situation of why this isn't. But, you know, I think obviously it would be tremendous if they put it on, you know, the Bellator app or the Paramount website, whatever it may be. And also, let's be honest, if they do that, it's going to be a great test study for Bellator to see if there is a high volume of Bellator fans that will sit and watch the Bellator product on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, well, I think the big test would be the quality of those cards, because if it's one of those crap cards where you got like a one fight main card, basically, I don't think you're going to have big traction. Now, you got a card like the one we're getting with the Bellator 200, is it, in England, right? Am I wrong here?
Yeah.
Okay, I always second guess myself, but I mean, that card's going to draw
I don't
traffic.
Understand why that card's on a Friday.
Well, when would you put it? Saturday?
Yeah. It's a
no,
holiday.
Is there no UFC?
I don't know if the UFC's announced it. Well, it's a holiday weekend. Why not put it on the afternoon? You know the UFC's not doing an afternoon card.
Oh, that's a good call. That's a good call. Do it in the afternoon. I think you're right, dude. I think you're totally right. Shoot, do it on a Sunday, you know?
Well, I think, you know what, the UFC might have a Sunday card that day.
Oh, okay, then don't do okay, if UFC is doing it on a Sunday, then don't
I
do that.
I think that's the Liverpool card, I think.
Is the holiday Monday?
Yeah.
Do it on a Monday. So both those cards,
Yeah, May 27th is the fight night card in Liverpool, which is going to be headlined by Darren Till against opponent to be determined. Why not just have those cards in the afternoon? I mean, like, you look at next week's Bellator card, Benson Henderson, Roger Huerta. I don't know what to expect out of Roger Huerta in that matchup.
I think I do. I don't think he's going to be very good.
The rest of that card, Ed Ruth is obviously a reason to pay attention to it. The rest of it,
Yeah, I agree with you.
No, you know, but look, I think it would be awesome if Bellator if they give their fans a way to watch the event live. I mean, even if it's, in some way, it just because there is, I think, a good amount of fans out there that are just clamoring for that. I mean, look, at the end of the day, yes, that they're they're owned by a television company and they want that thing on Paramount Network. I get it. But, I mean, it's just, it's 2018. You can't be a sports event and be on tape delay.
Yeah, it's relieving to hear that the attitude from Bellator is that's the direction they want to go in. This has been a huge criticism from both of us about the way they've been going about with all these tape delay cards. Just asinine with the way everything is at our fingertips on our computers, the amount of cord cutters, that it's just not live. And the big problem here is to make it happen, barge into that Paramount Network office, Scott Coker, with a 2x4 and a handcuff and chain yourself to the chair. And you say, I'm not leaving until everything we do is live somewhere. Like, don't put it off till tomorrow. I mean, that's what I do in college. I put all my classes off till tomorrow. But I promise you, if I'm running an MMA promotion, Jason, I'm going to prioritize that. And enough talking, just make it happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, I think the card that people are going to look forward to is the following week, Bellator 197. Of course, initially it's supposed to be Brent Primus defending the lightweight title against Michael Chandler. Primus out due to injury. So now it's a Brandon Gertz. You've got AJ McKee, Justin Lawrence, a nice 145-pound matchup. Also, Logan Storley is going to be on the main card, taking on Joaquin Buckley. And on the preliminary card, we're going to see the return of Josh Sampo. Yes, you may remember Josh from his time in the UFC. His last fight in the UFC was back May 23rd, 2015. Has not fought since then. Was supposed to fight in RFA in 2016. Had some situations come up. I had a chance to talk to him earlier this week about this matchup, the fact that he's coming up to 135 pounds for this fight, and of course taking on Don Quixada. So had a chance to catch up with him and get his thoughts about his matchup coming up here on Friday, April 13th at Bellator 197. Josh, I appreciate time. We've not seen since 2015. I know you were scheduled there for RFA 44 in 2016. So what's been going on in terms of not having any fights?
Well, my life's been a little tricky since my last UFC fight. Unfortunately, I had some family issues kind of pop up. My dad passed away about 4 weeks before my last UFC fight, so I had to take care of that and then just kind of push forward, and I still fought. Things didn't go my way, but in the wake of my dad passing, still had to kind of take care of some family things and help out with my mom and make sure that she was good to go, and that took about a year getting everything kind of situated. And then once I got that taken care of, I moved back to St. Louis, got a teaching job, and just kind of moving forward that way.
What are you teaching?
I am a seventh grade science and special ed teacher in St. Charles County.
So was that something that you went to school for?
Yeah, I got my my bachelor's in biology with a minor in chemistry, and then went back and got my master's in teaching. And coaching high school wrestling kind of pushed me into the education field. And yeah, so I teach middle school science right now.
Do you have any students that are just completely shocked to find out that you're a professional fighter?
No, I usually kind of keep that pretty quiet. But I got one of the other teachers I work with was one of my former roommates. and a college wrestling teammate of mine, and he tells the kids, and of course, and they start Googling me, and then that brings up a whole nother line of questioning. So sometimes it leads to good conversation. Other times it leads to me having to fib a little bit and tell them that that's my twin brother, which doesn't exist. So
you mentioned it's been 3 years. When you do you look at the fight game differently now as opposed to those four fights you had in the UFC?
A little bit. Back when I was in the UFC, once I got signed, and then I was like, all right, I'm going to do this full time and make this my job and sort of work on my butt off towards that. But then training and everything became a job. I had to get up every morning, you know, and I kind of lost a little bit of luster for it. You know what I'm saying? It's when it becomes a job, becomes work. You just don't have the same amount of passion. But now that I have something to fall back on, I choose to fight. I don't have to fight. I've got that opportunity to do it on my terms. So I think I view it differently in that aspect, but I still enjoy the competition of it, but I'm doing it because I want to, not because I have to.
Was there ever a moment over the last 3 years that you thought you would never take another professional fight?
That's crossed my mind a few times. It's just, you got to take opportunities when they arise. And after the RFA thing kind of fell through, I caught pneumonia about a week before weigh-in. So I was forced to back out, which kind of really stunk. But then we tried to get back on a couple other LFA cards and they weren't having it. So it's a little frustrating, but that crossed my mind a few times, but I know that I still have a little bit more fight left in me. It's only a couple more fights. We don't know how many more, but my body will let me know when. So, but yeah, definitely want to be able to take those opportunities when they do come around.
That's what I hear from athletes all the time, you know, because, you know, the word of, you know, hey, at what point will your athletic career come to an end? And they all say, ultimately, it's your body that'll ultimately tell you. And you are at 135 here. Was it just simply that it was the opportunity, or do you feel like, you know, to finish out your run here in MMA, that it will be at 135?
I'm going to take any opportunity that presents itself. This opportunity was at 135. I'm comfortable there. Comfortable cutting to 25, whatever the case may be. But when they said, hey, are you cool with that? And I said, yeah, definitely. I don't think it's going to be any different than I currently have. I mean, Dominic's a tough fighter in all aspects of the game, but I don't think he's a very big 20 or 35 pounder. You know, he doesn't pack a lot of mass. He's not it's not like a Dillashaw cutting down from like a buck 80. Yeah. It's not really that big of a deal.
You mentioned about Dominic Mezzada. He came into Bellator last year and was viewed as one of the top prospects. You know, for you, as you have assessed him as an opponent, what sticks out to him of why people were so high on him?
I think he's just a very well-rounded fighter. He's still pretty young. Well, he's got a good amount of fights underneath him too. I mean, I think he's very intelligent when he fights. He does like to come out and put on a good show, which I'm extremely excited about. I don't think I'm gonna have to chase him around the cage. I think he's gonna bring the fight to me, which is exactly what I'm hoping for. I think he's exciting. I think that's kind of why he's got a lot of poise behind him. He's got a good amount of fights with only a couple losses, but they're to tough, high level guys. So, I mean, with that record and the way that he fights, I think those are the things that really kind of bring his name up.
They always talk about advantages in a fight of, hey, you know, I feel like I got the advantage here, advantage there. Where does the fact of he hasn't seen you in 3 years plays into one of your advantages in this fight?
I don't know. I don't know if it does or it doesn't. It's just kind of, I mean, they're probably basing everything from, I watched an interview that he had not too long ago, and he said that his brother-in-law was my UFC debut. So he says he has a little bit of insight. But, I mean, it's kind of funny that he would bring that fight up. That was 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I mean, I'm a completely different fighter than I was then. Yeah, I haven't fought in 3 years, but that doesn't mean I've been sitting on the couch either. So I think that I've gained a lot of intelligence when it comes to fighting, being smarter, not just as reckless as I may have used to been, you know, kind of picking my shots, just being smarter and more intelligent when I get in the cage, using my skill set to win better positions. And I think that's kind of what it's about. I have to win every position in order to get the win in this fight.
Does your last fight haunt you at all? That you haven't quite gotten over it?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it was 15 minutes in the cage with a tough opponent. I was a little frustrated with the fact that I had to chase the guy around the cage. I mean, they always tell you that we want to see a good performance out of you, but I kind of relate fighting to like bull riding. Like half of your performance comes from your opponent, and if he doesn't really want to fight, he just wants to play the punch and run game, then you're kind of stuck in that that uh, that environment, which really kind of sucks, especially for somebody that really wants to fight or really wants to put on a good show or whatever the case is there. But I don't think that that's going to be the case with Dominic. But in my last fight, it was. It felt like it was one or two strikes, and then I felt like I was chasing him around the cage. Yeah, it doesn't haunt me, though. I mean, that's part of the past. It's part of growth, part of learning. There's some other facts on the table there, but it's nothing I can deal with now. So it's in the past and out of sight, out of mind.
Hometown fight for you here in St. Charles. What's the biggest pro of having a hometown fight?
Getting to sleep in my own bed. I mean, I literally am like a mile away from the venue, so that's definitely a benefit. Just being comfortable in that aspect of things. Family and friends being able to come out and watch. Yeah, little things like that just kind of really make it a lot more comfortable, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I know you have probably visualized how this fight goes down, you know, hundreds and thousands of times, but overall, I mean, how do you see the victory coming?
I see it just being an all-out. I see it going multiple ways. You know, I've kind of visualized every different aspect of it. I think it could be a three-round war. I think it could be, you know, 15 minutes of nonstop action for both of us, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I think that's what he brings to the table, and I'm really excited to be able to fight in that environment. But it could end early in the fight. It could end late in the fight. You never know. You know, that's why we do it. That's why we actually strap the gloves on a fight. It's not a, you know, we don't just, it's not a simulation and just see how things work out. But anything can happen in that 15 minutes, and I'm excited to see what does.
Would you describe this matchup as a reintroduction of yourself to the MMA fan?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, reintroduction. I mean, at this point, there's so many fighters out there that it's, I don't fight for fame. Of course, we get paid to fight, but that's not why I do it. I do it because I enjoy the combat. I enjoy the challenge, the athleticism, and all that it takes. I enjoy that, the competitive nature of it. I don't do this just for fame and riches and stuff like that, like a lot of people say. And like I said before, I fight because I choose to, not because I have to. You know, I already have a career and a good paying job. You know, got retirement building up and stuff like that. So I do this because I enjoy it and it's a passion of mine. But not because I need it to pay the bills.
You know, in terms of that motivation, I mean, outside of the competitive aspect of it, is there anything that motivates you in this matchup?
Yeah, a guy's gonna come at me and try and take my head off. So that motivates me, of course. So, just I enjoy the competition, just seeing what I'm capable of. I don't think that my past few performances in the UFC really allowed me to showcase what I'm capable of doing. I still don't even know my full potential. So we'll see if it comes out on the 13th.
In terms of full potential and saying how you haven't been able to show it off, I mean, if it was a scale of 1 to 10 and 10's a full potential, where do you think you were in those fights you had in the UFC?
I think I was getting pretty close to the top, but then, like I said, like it became a job to me. You know, it wasn't as much love and passion in there, and I kind of stem back to or look back at my college wrestling career and some of the best matches or best performances I ever had. It was just kind of going out there and just enjoying being in the moment. And I don't think I've been there in a while. I haven't enjoyed being in the cage or enjoyed being in that moment in a while. So, but just this whole camp, just leading up to this point, leading up to the fight, it's I'm getting back to that point where I want to be. I'm just enjoying all of it that it is. You know, the training and the constant running and all the road work and all those horrible aspects, but they're all a necessary evil to be able to perform at the highest level. So I think that makes things a little bit different here. I'm excited to see what I'm capable of doing and just going to go and enjoy myself.
And of course it all goes down on Friday night, April the 13th, live on the Paramount Network, Bellator 197. You'll be able to see Josh on the preliminary card as he takes on Dominic Mezeda. Josh, I appreciate time and let everybody know where they can follow you out on social media.
You can follow me on Facebook, just Josh Sampo. I've got Instagram, which is MMA Gremlin. You can follow me on Skype, if you like, at Gremlin Time. Just want to thank all my family and friends and sponsors and everybody that's supported me and helped me get back in the cage. It's been 3 years too long, but I'm glad that it's finally happening.
And Dale, there was my conversation with Josh Sampo. Really interested to see what does he look like since we have not seen him, you know, since 2015. So almost 3 years since he last fought. You know, he talked about some of the issues there. He's a teacher, you know, working there as a, you know, he says, hey, I do this because I love it. You know, admitted that, you know, while he was in the UFC, it did feel like a job to him, but Interested to see him against Dominic Mazzotta. That'll be a part of the preliminary card. You know, when you look at that Bellator 197 preliminary card, you obviously look at his opponent, Dominic Mazzotta. What does he look like? You got Derek Anderson, who is stepping up on relative short notice to take on Zach Bucha. Zach was supposed to take on Zach Freeman. Jordan Dowdy's on this card. Adam Sella, of course, everyone remembers him from his time during the Ultimate Fighter. Also, another name to pay attention to, Jordan Howard. He's taking on Eric Ellington at 135 pounds. So look out for that coming up in another couple weeks.
Don't forget about Baby Slice.
I'm actually going to try to get his opponent on the podcast. I'm interested to kind of his opponent's 1-0. You know, with Baby Slice, I guess, you know, how do you recreate? That's the wrong way to put it. You're not going to recreate the magic of his father.
Yes, you can. You got to go out there. He's got to fight people. He's got to go to backyards. He's got to do it on Twitch and get in street fights for like 10 straight years. And he's got to grow out like crazy facial hair and he's got to become a heavyweight. And then like 10 years down the line, you re-debut him. Like I realize that's going to – look, you're not going to be able to recreate Kimbo Slice. I mean, wasn't Kimbo Slice the ultimate fighter for the internet, right?
Oh, yeah.
He was just a cult figure.
What would YouTube be without Kimbo Slice?
Exactly. He was like the original Logan Paul, you know, super controversial but super watched.
Like you could literally make a case that Kimbo Slice deserves a piece of YouTube.
Yeah, I think they'll never do it, but like if there was like a YouTube highlight reel, there should be him walking into some dude's backyard with basketball shorts, shirtless, and smashing his face in. I mean, I remember, man, to high school, middle school. The feeling of watching his fights on somebody's phone in between class was just awesome.
I will tell you this. So when he fought James Thompson back in the day, that night was actually my bachelor party before I was getting married. And So my dad came out with us and he's like, "We're going to watch that Kimbo fight, right?" And I go, "What?" I go, "Hold on. You're not exactly the biggest of fight fans." He goes, "Oh, I know about Kimbo Slice." That's a sign of he just brought people to the television set that never ever watched it.
Yeah, man, it's amazing. Just a hell of a character, and it's freaking so sad what happened with him. You know, Because I guarantee you, he would still be fighting today.
Oh, and he'd be pulling massive viewership numbers.
He would. He absolutely would. It's so sad.
There's just there's handfuls of fighters that have come through that. Their ability to bring a different person to a television set. I mean, right now in the UFC, it's just Conor McGregor. I mean, there's no other, you know, I'll say this. I was thinking about this earlier in the week. Next week's UFC 223 is going to tell us a lot about Khabib Nurmagomedov. If, you know, look, the people around him are going to, you know, they'll proclaim he's a star. He's a huge star. But is he a pay-per-view star? We're going to find out next Saturday night.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out, you know, Wednesday. We'll see what those pay-per-view numbers are because it is so – like, again, the most surprising pay-per-view number of last year was that Cyborg number she did against Holly Holm. I did not expect it to be that way, that high.
Khabib was on that card too, so we got to note that.
That is true. Good point. And so it's going to be interesting to test the waters two different ways, Jason. Obviously – the amount of buzz we get the sense of heading into that card, and of course the number that we get midway through the week. And I don't have a sense of what it's going to be like because we're 2 weeks out. The benefit of this card is the spacing. It's been a while since people have paid hard-earned money for a mixed martial arts card. That's a big-time value. And then you also have the depth of the card. You got three great fights for the casual fan, the championship fight along with Chiesa Pettis, and then of course the main event. I would say casual fans really care about that, and they'll be pleasantly surprised to see Iaquinta Felder and Makano and Qatar. So, Cater, I just think, honestly, Nurmagomedov is not a star quite yet, but this could be a star-making performance. Now, the problem for him is he's got to beat Tony Ferguson. And that's tough. That's a tough problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, and I got to think that the UFC is hoping for a Khabib win because, I mean, look, I think that – you do a Khabib fight in Russia, I mean, I think it would just be massive. For the UFC, of course, we're going to talk about this fight card, the main card, next week on the podcast. I can't wait for that main card. I love all five fights on the main card. I'm absolutely in love with it. But we did want to talk about the preliminary card. And when you look at these eight fights, the two that stick out to you are the final two prelims, Ray Borg versus Bran Moreno and Carolina Kovacevic versus Felice Herrig. Outside of those two fights, is there anything else that really sticks out to you?
Yeah, I think those two stick out, and then after that you kind of don't get as excited. But the more you look at what you got going on here, the better these fights look. To me, if I'm going to pick one fight from the remaining six, the one I'm most looking forward to would have to be the matchup between Oliver Aubin-Mercier against Evan Dunham. Just because, obviously, in Evan Dunham, you have a fighter who has been a stalwart in the lightweight division. He has won four of his last five. But I think the ace of Mercier, Canadian off of that Tough Nation show, and he has a lot of charisma. And while he may not have the quality victories that Dunham does have, he has just one loss since that Ultimate Fighter finale where he lost to Chad Lapree. So you look at all the opponents Aubin-Mercier has had, I think you could make the case that Evan Dunham is the best guy he's seen since he stepped toe-to-toe with Chad Lapree. So I personally think that Aubin-Mercier-Dunham is the matchup I'm looking forward to the most outside of the top two fights. But I definitely don't believe it'll be the most exciting contest.
I would a matchup I would throw out there is a fight that's going to be part of the Fight Pass prelims: Devin Clark versus Michael Rodriguez. Of course, people have saw Michael there on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Devin's been in the UFC now for a little bit. That one sticks out there. I will be interested. Will Artem Lobov have a popular fighter in his corner?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't think he shows up for Fight Pass, Jason. I think Connor is going to show up late, and he's going to be like, why isn't Lobov in the main event?
You think he just rolls in right as the main event started, and he's just staring down those two dudes?
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Because, look, you have to imagine
that
once Tony and Khabib weigh in, that's when we get the official announcement that Connor's been stripped of the title, right? Or do you not strip him of the title until right before they step into the octagon on Saturday night?
You got to wait until they step. I mean, they got to step on that scale. Okay, here's something crazy. We're going to get distracted here, but what if Nurmagomedov misses weight, pulls out of the fight, and Conor McGregor steps in?
Oh, man. I would not rule that out, man. I would not.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. Because I tell you what, I guarantee you, Conor McGregor is looking at this as – after UFC 223, I already see it, man. We're going to be talking about Conor McGregor because I do think this is going to be the moment where he returns back to the spotlight. I think he's going to be in Lobov's corner. I think he's going to be in that octagon when the fight's over. I think he's still going to be lightweight champion because I think they're going to set up the winner of that fight against McGregor. That's my personal takeaway. But I think the thing with McGregor, unless he's lost himself, which is super possible, I think those guys around him will die for Conor. I mean, there is a real brotherhood with McGregor. So I think that's going to be evident if he's in his corner. Because if you're Lobov, how do you not look up to a guy like Conor? And I'm sure Conor looks up to Lobov. I'm sure there's a lot of those guys that aren't really big time names that Conor McGregor looks up to as kind of his, you know, the guys when he stepped in the gym, they were already there at a high level.
Yeah.
So I think McGregor will be there. And I think that'll probably be the best fight other than the top two fights at the prelims. I think Caceres Lobov is a real interesting stand up contest.
Yeah. Yeah. That one, and then Zabit Magomed Sharipov, you know, obviously there's the, you know, a ceiling's very high on that kid taking on Kyle Bochniak. That's the opening matchup.
Don't forget Joe Lozon, man.
Yeah, you got Joe Lozon against Chris Grutzmacher. That's going to be the second fight on the FS1 prelims. Other matchups, you got Beck Rollins versus Ashley Evans-Smith. Kovacevic and Herrig, it's a big matchup at 115 pounds. I mean, it's kind of that fight of, can Felice Herrig put herself in that title contention conversation? Because you know, you look at the winner of that fight, you know, depending on what happens in the co-main event of UFC 223, you know, they're right there.
Yeah. To me, Felice Herrig is fighting better than she ever has before. But I tell you what, I feel so bad because I constantly pick against Felice Herrig and she constantly proves me wrong. I was so impressed with her back when she beat Alexa Grasso at that fight night card in February. I did not expect that to happen. And she, after that, she beats Justin Kish and Courtney Casey. And I just think Kobolkiewicz is at a slightly higher level than even what we've seen out of Felice Herrig. But I wouldn't be shocked if Herrig wins. It just seems like things are clicking on all cylinders. And this is a great feature fight on the prelims. I'm really looking forward to it. Again, I think Kovalevich is going to beat Felice Herrig. I think it's pretty clear this is likely going to go the distance, as is the case for both these fighters. But even though I'm not picking Felice Herrig, she has certainly earned the benefit of the doubt in these fights, that she is just consistently evolving her game, and she's kind of making a turnaround that I did not expect out of her.
Yeah, it's tough to pick Felice Herrig in that matchup. But, I mean, look, I'm looking forward – to these fights next Saturday night. Let me ask you this. How much coverage do you think WrestleMania gets on MMA websites next week?
Oh, how much coverage? Well, real quick, Jason, before we go, I just want to get your pick. Borg and Moreno, who do you got?
Moreno.
I agree with you. That's a great fight. But WrestleMania coverage? Dude, oh my God. It's going to be all over the place.
Here's a question.
Mm-hmm. Do we cover it?
On Sunday of next week, is there more WrestleMania coverage on MMA websites or more post UFC 223 coverage?
Oh, God. For the love of God, I hope it's UFC coverage. It's a good question. We got to pick a random time. Okay, what we'll do is we will look at like 1 o'clock Eastern time. All the viewers can do this. Pick your MMA website and screenshot it, and let us see that. Let us see that front page, and let's see how many pro wrestling stories there are, and how many MMA stories there are.
I mean, look, there's going to be a lot of Ronda Rousey coverage on MMA websites next week.
We're about to talk about Ronda Rousey,
and this week, because she did on Tuesday make appearances on ESPN Radio and ESPN TV. I'm going to let you hear this clip from her on the Wingo and Golic show, where it was a very awkward interview that Mike Golic had with Ronda Rousey.
Let's go back and start with when you knew from the MMA, when you were done there, when you knew in your mind, I'm not going to fight anymore.
I never said that.
Ah, so there is a possibility that you could go back in time?
There's a possibility that I could go back in time. That's your question to me.
Go back in time and fight. Go back in the octagon.
I do not have the ability to go back in time, no.
No. Would you fight again?
I don't know.
Now, I understand what Golic was trying to ask there. And I think a lot of people probably understand what he was trying to say there. You know, and when I saw that in that clip, the thing that it just kind of amazed me, Daniel, about that is how the WWE PR staff has not coached her up to it. Because you know these MMA questions are going to come on a sports show. And look, you're the pro wrestling guy. And, you know, she was on, Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman show. Very awkward interview there as well. I mean, like, I would love to know what the WWE kind of thinks about her appearances today, because I guess depending on, you know, your thoughts on Ronda, but I mean, it's just like, I looked at those clips and I'm just like, how does the WPR not teach her how to handle those situations better?
Yeah, this is a rough one for Ronda Rousey, because in the pro wrestling landscape, I mean, at this point, she's supposed to be a babyface. You know, she's supposed to be the protagonist, the character that is good. And she's coming across very much like a heel. And it's just something where, as a person, it's insane that you aren't prepared to answer these questions, and you aren't aware that the way she is answering those questions hurts her reputation and rubs people the wrong way, because she is being incredibly difficult when people are giving her a platform to promote her product, which her product at this time is wrestling. So you know, if you come out there and you act like, God, was it Ken Griffey Jr. that one time on ESPN gave like one word answers every time? I hope it was Ken Griffey Jr.
I'll tell you a story. When BJ Upton got drafted by the Rays, at that time I was working in sports radio here in Tampa, and then, you know, he gets drafted, they bring him on, literally every answer was one or two words, and it was just awful.
Yeah, it's awful because.
But when you put an 18-year-old kid in that situation, more times than not, they're not going to know how to handle that situation. But I think for Rhonda being in the public eye as long as she has, I mean, I guess, and look, I'm not, you know, look, you're putting her on ESPN because the amount of eyeballs and to get people to get that WWE subscription for WrestleMania next weekend. I just, you know, I guess I have to imagine, and I'll turn to you on this because you know much more about it than I do. I have to wonder, does the WWE, do they get nervous by the fact of like, oh man, this isn't the greatest look, and what happens if our fans turn on her and they start just chanting about her knockout losses?
Well, they might, and the good thing is, if in pro wrestling, any reaction is a good reaction because you can turn her into a heel, and that can just be a part of it. As long as people care, that's what matters. But I will say, as a performer, there are some serious red flags early on. Which, look, to be fair, if you analyze any person that was training pro wrestling 3 weeks into their pro wrestling career, they would all look like awful garbage, other than maybe Kurt Angle. He's the only guy who's ever been good super early. But you were talking about becoming a pro wrestler under a heavy microscope, and I don't think Ronda wants to be this special attraction. I think she wants to be a regular women's wrestler, one of the best of all time. And God, early on, she really does not perform well when it comes to the microphone. She only has one gear right now, and she really nails it. She really does the "I'm going to F you up" face well. I mean, she is fierce. Dude, it is awesome. Right now, they're screwing her up right now because some stupid person in WWE thought it was a good idea to just cake her face in makeup. And I am not a makeup guy. I don't know anything about makeup. You'd take me to Ulta or Sephora or whatever, Target, and I wouldn't know what makeup is, but it's distracting, man. It's really like you got to look at this. I don't know what they're doing to the baddest woman on the planet.
I've seen the pictures. Yeah, it's overkill on the makeup,
dude. She doesn't need makeup. Like, I like, you know, no one needs makeup other than maybe I got a lot of pimples, so maybe I got to cover that up. But moral of the story, what I'm trying to say.
When you do those close-up shots on TV,
it's a little gross.
Makeup can come in handy.
Yeah, it's true. You got some pimples, you got to cover it. Moral of the story about Rhonda, she leaves a lot to be desired every time she talks in the microphone. And I think that may be a glaring issue that she may not be able to fix, because when you look at Rhonda and you really analyze the insecurities she has and maybe some of her pitfalls, it really comes down to speaking. And this is kind of messed up because it's been some adversity she's faced since she was a child. Like,
yeah.
Now we're looking at this more sympathetic towards Rhonda. At the end of the day, what she said was pretty lame, I would say, when she did the ESPN car wash. But to offer more of a sympathetic perspective, I mean, she had serious speech issues growing up as a child. I don't know what she had exactly. It's like a praxia or something. I can't remember.
Failure sucks. No one wants to fail. And for her, her failures have been on a national level where everyone has seen it. I think, you know, and look, it goes back to when she was in the UFC. And I think you have to look back at how the UFC handled her going into UFC 207 and say they were brilliant in what they did by not having her do any interviews, because this probably would have played out the way it played out. You know, but I look at it and I say, there's gotta be some concern if you are the WWE, cause you want her out there. I mean, look, you know, they're going to make her look like $1 million next Sunday in New Orleans. There's no question. She's going to come off looking great, but I think you look at the long term, and also I have to look at the people that are around her. Like, these interviews could be, you know, can be handled in a much better way than, you know, I mean, she's had some time to figure out how, you know, like, you heard the Mike Golic piece. To me, I think you just come out and say, look, you know, you never say never, but, you know, I'm a professional wrestler at this point in my life. I'm under contract with the WWE. MMA is in the past. I'm not saying that, you know, I may not go back there at some point, but right now I'm a professional wrestler. Is it that hard to teach that answer?
Yeah, she isn't the first person to do an interview after an embarrassing loss. And this, honest to God, potentially if she had gotten out in front of this way prior, this probably still wouldn't have been a question she faces all the time. But these people are going to ask these questions because they don't care that much about WrestleMania. You know, they care about the most. The reason you are famous is because you are a UFC fighter. Uh-huh. And when these casual sports talk radio shows are bringing you on, they're going to ask you the water cooler discussion question. The people who barely know Ronda Rousey, their listeners want to hear these questions. You know, they're going to allow you to promote your product, your WrestleMania, but you're going to have it. And I just think Ronda's biggest problem, and this is a major problem to have in the world of professional wrestling, has been communicating. Communication is a major issue for her, and she's got to figure it out if she wants to be – well, honest to God, she probably doesn't have to figure it out, because for wrestling, she could always have a manager that does all the talking. I do think she's going to be really good inside the ring, but for the WWE, I have to assume they've tried to figure this thing out from a public relations standpoint, and I think their next best move, if you're the WWE, is you're just not talking that much anymore. We're going to give you a manager. You're going to kick ass in the ring, and you're not going to do any interviews on sports talk radio or sports TV, because clearly she's shown that she does not have the ability to do them.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure, you know, I mean, I think with her, you put her on Ellen, you put her on Jimmy Fallon, you know, all the late night shows that are not going to ask her about, you know, her MMA time. But look, there's going to be a lot of coverage on MMA websites next week for WrestleMania. I think there's no question about it. I mean, look, it's, you know, obviously the WWE's biggest event of the year. Now, before we kind of get into the last couple of things we want to mention here on this week's podcast, I'll let you hear my interview with John Castaneda, who's got a fight coming up here at Combatives America on April the 13th, as I had a chance to talk to him about his experience with that one-night tournament Combatives did last year and his rematch here at the Combatives show on April the 13th. John, man, I appreciate the time. It has been some time since we've had a chance to talk here. Haven't had a chance to talk to you since the one-night tournament. You know, obviously there's a lot that goes into that. A lot of luck has to go into as well. You get to the finals, unfortunately, couldn't get the win. But what is the biggest takeaway you just take from that night?
Yeah, no, first and foremost, thanks for having me on the show once again. But in terms of the eight-man tournament, it was something that was so far-fetched. I mean, it's nothing that you can really prepare for. We tried to simulate what the night would go like in practice, you know, day in and day out. But I'll tell you what, it wasn't anything like practice, that's for sure. You know, three fights, three different fighters, three different styles, all within about 2 hour span. So it was pretty hectic, to say the least. The first fight went pretty easy, you know, one round fight. The second fight with Mark Gomez was, you know, a close fight. You know, could have gone either way is how everyone kind of perceives it. You know, I think that personally, after breaking down the video and watching the fight again, I won the first two rounds. I secured him pretty dominantly, and then he won the third one. So, you know, 29-28 all across the board is what I got, and that's actually what the judges scored the fight. So nothing out of surprise there. And, you know, by the third fight, I was pretty exhausted. I was beat up from the second fight. I like to say that I thrived the most in a professional setting in a sense of one fight, one opponent, one style to focus on, 3 5-minute rounds. That's where I thrive. Before the tournament, you know, I was on a 10-fight win streak in that setting, in the normal professional fight setting, the one night, you know, like I said, one night, one opponent. And that's what I plan to do with Mark Gomez. You know, this is especially knowing that I've already beat him. I know I have what it takes to beat him. I know his flaws. I know his strengths. And I'm just ready to go out there and take care of business again.
Did this rematch make sense to you when it was first, you know, approached to you?
You know what? I really actually wanted the rematch with Levy, Levy Marquin, the guy I fought in the finals. I think honestly, Mark Gomez is just a good draw. He's got a lot of fans that follow Combate Americas. You know, they probably wanted the rematch, and so that's why it's happening. You know, and for me, I have no problem with it. Like I said, if it's a close fight, if it was absolutely, you know, one-sided, you know, three-round absolutely dominance, I'd be like, you know, this makes no sense for me. Beating the same guy twice isn't going to make me better. You know, it's not going to put me in the rankings any higher. But seeing as how it was a close fight, absolutely, you know, I thought it made sense, and I was more than willing to have more than happy to take the rematch.
One of the cliches we hear in the fight game is the fighter who lost the first fight has the advantage in the second fight. Obviously, you're not going to agree with that because you feel you have the advantage. Why would you say you is your biggest, one of your biggest advantages in this fight is the fact of I know I've already beat him and he knows he already lost to me.
You know what? No, that is an advantage. I'm going to say that. It's more so of like that's more of like a mental advantage, I would say. Knowing that somebody basically outgrinded me in a three round fight, you know, I'd absolutely be hesitant. You know, that'd be in the back of my head, no doubt. But I think, like I said, that's one of the small advantages. A bigger one would be that me and him actually got to do some training together well before the tournament. Actually, on two different occasions, we were flown out to do promotional videos, pictures, media, stuff like that for the event. And I would get a rental car every time. You know, I think we were in L.A. once and then we were in Miami once. And I would get a rental car to be able to train at the local gyms while I'm on these trips. You know, I can't just not be training. And being as one of the only guys that spoke Spanish and English in the tournament, and I could communicate with Mark, you know, he's being him being a Spaniard and only speaking Spanish with that, you know, obviously the Spain dialect. But he would ask me if he can come train with me. And I was like, absolutely, man, you know. And at the time, I knew that we were in the tournament together, and we just honestly kind of assumed that we were going to be on opposite sides of the bracket. And we always joked about it. We were like, hey, I'll see you in the finals. And we were like, yeah, dude, we'll see you in the finals. Well, long story short, I got a lot of training with him. I got to kind of, you know, see what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. And like I said, you know, we really got to, I guess, we got really got close and in a sense of just training together pretty, you know, pretty frequently. Coupled, you know, we were there for a week long and we trained together every single day and we'd partner up too. So I knew going into that fight that I had an advantage because of our time together in the practice room. You know, I had the advantage on the ground. My jiu-jitsu was stronger. I was more explosive and just quicker, you know, and quicker than him. And I knew that going into the fight. So then when I saw the brackets, you know, just a few days prior to the event, and I knew that I was going to see Mark in the second round because I knew he was going to take care of business first round. He knew the same thing, and that was my mental edge. You know, I had an advantage because I had trained with him recently. So,
you know, when you have a guy you've trained with, but now you've also fought him, do you take more out of the training sessions as opposed to those three rounds that you had back in November?
No, absolutely not. You know, I'm just giving you an example as to you know the many different advantages that I have going into this third fight. You know, I think that they're both, you know, both of them, I took a little bit of both, good pieces of information from both our training sessions and our fight, but more so our fight. Absolutely. You know, I saw his tendencies in a live fight and, you know, and that's when it matters. You know, you could be, some people are really, really, really good in the practice room. And when it comes to perform, you know, there's just so many things that you can't really simulate, you know, the crowd, the pressure, the adrenaline dump, you know, it's all these things. And so I was able to see how he performed, how slow he starts. You know, obviously everything can change from one fight to the next, but I have a pretty good idea of what Mark Gomez is going to try to do to me.
You know, and it's interesting you bring that up about it. And I was listening to somebody the other day where they were talking about, like, there's just a huge difference from, hey, you can be a Hall of Fame guy in the gym, but all of a sudden you get into an arena where there's 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 people. It drastically changes, and there's just some guys who can't, you know, basically become that fighter. For you, you've been in these situations. Why do you think that is? Of why some guys just can't elevate to that level?
You know, that's a good question. Like you've said, I've been here in this situation plenty of times. You know, main event, headlining a card for Combate Americas. You know, The thing that's going to be different, though, is I've never had a rematch. I've never had a rematch with an opponent, so it'll be interesting. But in a sense of the guys making that level to that next transition, you know, to be able to perform well in the practice room and then also in the, you know, in the arena is, I think, just comfortability and experience. You know, for me, I had 16 amateur fights, and this is about to be my 20th professional fight. You know, that's over 35 fights in general. You know, I'm I like to think of myself as, you know, a seasoned veteran. You know, I've been in that cage a long period of time. So I know exactly what it feels like. I know, you know, what the nerves feel like. I know, like, the hesitation and everything, you know, and Mark as well. Mark is 20 and 11. He's had over 30 fights as well. That's just in his pro career. You know, I don't know much about his amateur career, but I'm sure, you know, he's the same. You know, we both were able to turn it on and kind of focus in on the fight.
How do you see the victory coming in this matchup?
I think it's going to end early, you know, a lot earlier than last time, obviously, you know, going to a decision. I've been working a lot on my boxing, my striking. I know that I always have the advantage on the ground with Mark, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, anything like that. But I'm looking for a quick finish in the first round.
In terms of your boxing, have you done anything different for this matchup than as opposed to the tournament?
Absolutely. So I actually just got done. I was out in Arizona training at the MMA lab for about 3 weeks. I'm actually, they postponed my fight. So I was supposed to fight March 23rd. And so it was going to go right up until my camp was over. But now that they bumped it up to April 13th, I'm actually home for just a short amount of time. And then I'm actually headed back to finish camp at the MMA lab, where they have, you know, a lot of lengthy strikers like Mark Gomez is. You know, he's, you know, for a bantamweight, he's like 5'10", which is, you know, kind of on the taller side. They have a lot of good bodies there, a lot of high level guys that kind of simulate his style. So that's kind of one thing that I've incorporated into my camp this time, you know. But it doesn't matter where you go, you know, there's no secret sauce, there's no secret recipe to success in the sport, you know. There it's just different looks, you know. That's essentially all it is. You know, I'm training out of the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy here in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. High level coaching, high level teammates here as well. I'm just getting different looks, you know. That's essentially all it is.
In terms of, you know, spending time at the lab and also back home in Minnesota, who's going to be in your corner for this matchup?
My corners are going to be Greg Nelson out of the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy, John Crouch, and then from the MMA lab, and then also Dan Moret, my corner, who's been in my corner every single fight of my professional career.
Obviously, everyone knows Greg, everyone knows John, and what they've accomplished in the sport. How are they different coaches?
You know what? That's crazy. They're actually so much alike, and that's why I've been so blessed to have, you know, the greatest and top tier coaches from the get go of this sport. My very first coach in college, Crew Ray White, who now he coaches out of the Michigan Top Team in Michigan. So he's a Muay Thai coach over there, and then transitioned into the academy with Greg Nelson. Both John Crouch and Greg Nelson are very personable guys. They like to break down technique. Specific to you, you know, obviously they're running a group class, group MMA team, but they're like I said, they're really personable. They'll break stuff down that you're doing wrong and focus on you when it's your time. You know what I mean? It's if you have a fight coming up, they're going to focus on you. They're going to give you the stuff that you need, the technique that you need. Coach Greg and John are both super nice in the sense of, like, they'll watch various videos on your opponent. They'll watch his tendencies. They'll break all these videos down and kind of come up with a game plan as to what you need to do to be victorious.
But, of course, we're still a couple weeks away from this matchup, April the 13th, Combatives America. John, man, as always, I appreciate time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. You guys can find me at Instagram, John Castaneda _, otherwise at Twitter at SexyMexy135. Happy to put on a performance on April 13th. You guys tune in.
And there was my conversation with John Castaneda. Really appreciate him coming on the podcast, talk about his rematch here at Combatives America. Of course, you know, they did that one-night tournament. Dan, do you think we ever see a tournament in some form in the UFC? I probably say no.
Ooh, good question, and I think so, but not soon. Just because a tournament is a hallmark of combat sports, and who knows how long the UFC is going to be around, Jason. I think you may have a different mind on top of the organization that goes with the tournament. But I guarantee you, I think it's hard to say no regarding that question, because you never know when that opportunity is going to present itself. You never know when a title is going to be vacated. You never know when someone's going to think this is a great idea. But I will tell you this, tournaments are just a hallmark of boxing, kickboxing, pro wrestling, MMA. So even though we have not seen a tournament or a one-night tournament in the UFC in a long time, never say never.
Yeah, this sport, you never say never. Now, if anyone follows MMA Supremacy on Twitter, you notice one of the things that that account does a lot is 100% MMA. And Daniel, we saw something that describes that moniker, and that came last week after we did the podcast, where it was revealed that there is going to be an event in South Florida in Fort Lauderdale on Thursday, April the 26th. It is called Cam Soda Legends. This is going to be a free broadcast on Cam Soda. Going to be headlined by Rico Rodriguez taking on Alex Nicholson. You also have Charles Bennett taking on Bruce Luchmandal. And if you've not seen the poster for this event, you should check it out because the image they use for Charles Bennett is amazing, I guess you'd say. But so this is a press release on the event where it says, today, Cam Soda, a leading live cam platform, announced its first ever mixed martial arts event, Cam Soda Legends. This continues Cam Soda's foray into original digital programming. You know, the event will be in Fort Lauderdale. It'll be streamed for free on legends.camsoda.com. Of course, it mentions the bout, and it says, for the first time, fans will be able to directly interact with fighters in real time. As the fights occur, fans watching the live stream will be able to determine bonus money and provide extra incentive for specific finishing moves. The fights will be 100% free to watch, similar to webcamming. Those watching the live stream can purchase tokens that will enable them to tip toward fight goals and determine cash bonuses. These specific requests will be relayed to the fighters in real time during their fights. The more a user tips, the more direction over the fights they are afforded. As a special bonus, ring girls for the fight will be available after the event for live cam session. I can't even read this without laughing. So Daniel,
Jason's.
This is 1000% MMA.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Since you've been doing the read on the story, I've been investigating camsoda.com, and this is a great site. You know, Jason, you know me, I'm a big porn guy. So, you know, this is right up my alley. You know, MMA comes to Cam Soda. This is some good stuff. You know, the worst part about this is the amount of viruses I'm going to get on my computer and the amount of ads. But I will cover this fight card, Jason. In fact, if you want to give me 5,000 tokens that I can use during the event, maybe afterwards, I will gladly take them. But yeah, dude, I got it. If I told you that there was a Cam Soda event and which MMA fighters will be on this card, is Rico Rodriguez and Charles Bennett like not your first two choices?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I mean, Tim Sovia is number three.
When I sent you the poster, what was your first thought when you saw the Charles Bennett part of it?
He looked hilarious. How would you describe how he looks?
I don't even know how it looks like he's had a rough night.
It looked like he just took this. It looked like they realized they didn't have a picture of him and they asked him to send him a selfie or something. What I don't get about Charles Bennett is, when did he change his nickname from Crazy Horse to Felony?
I don't know. I mean, but like, you just saw this. I mean, look, and here's the thing about this event. It will get probably 1000% more coverage than any other regional show will get all year long.
Yeah. Well, here's the one actual cool thing about this event, and I don't have this software. I don't really know. Maybe I do. I don't know how this works, but they do say this is going to be broadcasted in virtual reality where what's the quote? It says like you're going to be able to see it like you're inside the cage. So I experienced the octagon like never before. Allow fans to step inside the ring with 4K VR. I think that might be cool. But I don't really know how to operate that or get that on my computer.
Well, look, for anyone who did not read Ben Folks' piece on this last week, I mean, I was laughing my ass off when I was reading that.
What did he say?
He was basically making light of it, essentially. He's like, what if I was going to tell you? And he went through all these different scenarios. I mean, but it's, you know, like here's the question. If you cover this sport and you're a married man or have a girlfriend, how do you explain to your significant other of what you're doing?
I love it because it's great cover. It's great cover, you know. You know, obviously, the incognito Google window is one of the great inventions of our time, but usually, like
this is, but this is my thing. Like, I want to see what do people tip for.
Yeah. Oh, so you're gonna watch this too? Okay.
Like during the fight, I wonder.
Rodriguez's boobs.
Will people like be able to see like you know someone like tip to tell Charles Ben, I want to see you do a Superman punch?
And how is this communicated towards him? You know, he doesn't listen to his corner in the first place.
Here's the other question. Like, is this going to be regulated by the Florida Boxing Commission, or is this going to be at some tribal land that's not a part of the commission?
Yeah, I don't think this could get regulated. I don't know how you
I asked the question to someone who was working for the event, and I didn't really get an answer on that.
Yeah, I think they're just going to do it inside. I just feel like you can't get regulated for something like this. I mean, the amount of, you can't have this type of interaction of fighters during a fight, right? Like that just sounds absurd.
You know, some people are going to be asking for some screwed up stuff too.
Yeah, of course. Under the anonymous Twitter handle, the anonymous username, you can just plug in there. I mean, you're going to be asking for, you know, Charles Bennett to just poop on the floor. I mean, we are going to go crazy. We are going full MMA with this story. We will cover. I don't know if this event's actually going to happen, but maybe it does. I'm looking forward to it, though.
I bet it happens.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, we could laugh now, and Rico Rodriguez and Charles Bennett might get six-figure paydays.
I'm sure you would gladly fly in Fort Lauderdale for that one.
You know what? In this case, I don't mind watching this behind my computer screen. Dude, if I fly into Fort Lauderdale, they'll probably make me do a webcam show. Maybe, yeah. So I love that this is real. I don't think we're ever going to get more MMA than this story, but no, the sport has surprises.
I mean, I remember when I got the press release, I was kind of like, this has got to be a joke, right? But this is a crazy thing. Like a week before this, someone had told me about this, and I was like, oh no, man, you're making stuff up. No, nope, they weren't.
Yeah, this is insane. I just think this is something that I'm looking forward to, and I'm so glad that Rico Rodriguez is a part of this. I mean, this is a UFC heavyweight champion that is now.
I will say when I read the press release, the fact of I think they didn't realize that Octagon is a trademark by the UFC.
Yeah,
that's
a good point. I hadn't picked up on that either. You're right, though.
Yeah, definitely. But I am looking forward to next weekend, UFC 223. It'll be here. You know, have Khabib and Tony just stopped training? They're just weight cutting right now, right?
Dude, I don't even think they should weight cut. I think they should just be laying in bed watching whatever's on Netflix. The UFC should pay them money not to train.
By the way, I don't know if you saw this. The Conor McGregor documentaries now on Netflix.
Notorious.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard some people who've watched it said it's really good. I was gonna try to watch it at some point.
Well, I'm looking forward to the second Conor.
I guess apparently in the documentary, there's footage of where Dana White comes to Conor and lets him know that Aldo was out and that they wanted to do the Chad Mendes fight.
Wow, that's actually pretty good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm interested to watch it. I mean, you know, I'm always looking for new shows on Netflix to watch.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that too then. I'll give it a little watch. I remember when it came out, I just never saw it. And a big time documentary season, man. Looking forward to the Andre the Giant documentary next week or 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of great things. I'm interested in that. I mean, I was a wrestling fan at that point, and you know, and some of the stories you hear on Andre are pretty legendary. If you are a wrestling fan on Radio Influence, we do have a wrestling podcast called Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. His guest this week was Stevie Ray of Harlem Heat. Had some great stories. You know, talked about how basically him and Booker T ended up forming Harlem Heat, and how Eddie Gilbert was behind that.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I got to check that out. I mean, one of the great tag teams in WCW, and you know, if you're around a wrestler like Booker T for any period of time, surely you have a million hilarious stories. So that sounds awesome, man. Yeah, I love the podcast and constantly getting great freaking guests. And surely Stevie Ray is another one.
Yeah, and of course, we'll be back next week as we are going to preview UFC 223. Also, we'll talk about Benson Henderson versus Roger Huerta. And you never know who might be stopping in for an interview on the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you always listen on RadioInfluence.com, Apple Podcasts, if you're tuning in radio, and Google Play. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the podcast, which you always hear every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Odell Beckham stances, I'm not stepping on the field again until I get a new contract. Well, we know that that's not going to be the case because when the checks start to come in, he'll be there. But he won't be there for the offseason, and he has the right for that. That's, you know, again, more of an indication of his stance. I get it. Players want to get as much out of their contract as they can, and they have a right to do that. What I have said all along as it relates to Odell Beckham, you have to separate things. Let's talk as a football player. He is an elite player in this league. But the reality is he's a game-changing talent. Now, what he has become, he's become a major distraction. There's no doubt about that. The on-the-field distractions, the knucklehead moves, you know, holding out is one issue, but how you conduct yourself, how you act, needs to be exemplary, and it's been far from it.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.